tonight and that you kind of give us a little bit of lead in terms of who we are as we kind of put all this stuff together, and at least in terms of the dark side, and as we look at this. In Jesus' name, amen. I started with functional theology. That's really what you believe. So you tell me what you believe, and out of that, you begin to function in your life based upon the things that are the essential qualities of your theology. Everybody's a theologian here. How you see the world. What's the issue of your life? And that's what this thing is all about. Functional. How do you live things out in terms of your life? Now, I started thinking about this when I saw a bumper sticker that says, Jesus is the answer. And I kept wondering to myself, yeah, but what was the question? Well, that's the issue in this thing. What is your question? And if you're going to write something down, this is it. You're the one who needs to know the answer to your question. You're the one that needs to know the answer to your question, whatever that is. Tonight we're going to be talking a little bit about the dark side in all of them. Now, of course, I left this up here, but you got World 5. You should have this sheet, too, in front of you, because we're going to walk through all five of them this evening. In terms of the obsession, that's the obsession, that's the dark side. And we're going to kind of encapsulate the whole thing in terms of that. For five worlds, five ways of looking at the world. Five lenses by which we are defining ourselves and gives us some idea of where we are. The depression, I talked about a sine wave and a line in which you're either above the line or below the line at times in your life. And when you're below the line, you're on the dark side, the obsession, that's where depression comes in. Normality is that straight line around there, but we all have our ups and downs. So that kind of things happens. The other thing that I talked about in all these worlds, there is an essence to all of us. That's what I would call the child in you, the essence of who you are in that question. But then there is also those times when we are circumstantially put into one of the five worlds because of things. But even when we are circumstantially in like the world of suffering, that has to do maybe with health issues, that can have to do with marital issues, that can have to do with just about anything you think of. But even in the essence of that, what you're doing is, that circumstance is, you will ask your question out of who you are, even if you're circumstantially in another one. Where do the issues come from? Well, a lot of times they have to do with our childhood. You know, it's kind of like, what's the most important, environment or genetics? You know, well, I don't know. I think they play together. But a lot of times we discover these things in the first 5 years or so of our lives is placed into some kind of thing that happens. And that's where you begin to have your issues. And they can both be environmental and the essence of who you are. You know, a person in Bangladesh might have a different issue because of their environment. Okay? You know, and I talked about, you know, when 9/11 happened in this country, if you were a child of a parent who died in that attack, that changes your entire way in which you look at the world, and it affects you. Now, if you're an adult and you lose a spouse, then that's a different animal. But if you're a child and you get affected by that, that might be the issue that you have to deal with in terms of your lifetime thinking. A lot of times these defining moments come in those kinds of instances. I also think that sometimes the essence of who we are in terms of these worlds also can be family related. You can come out of a family that may function out of World 4, one or both parents, and sometimes that can be placed upon you as well. I can't prove any of this, but it's stuff that gets into us, and that's how this stuff works. When you take this test, when you take it home with you, there is all kinds of things that you can look at it. And it's not something you want to take quickly. You want to ponder it when you do it, and we'll touch on that at the very end of this thing. Because the things that make up you have to do with your house and the way that you decorate your life, whether it's your house or wherever. It has to do with your Freudian slips. It has to do with your theological statements about life, things that grab you. And those are the kinds of things that deal with us. Now, world one, the issue is really the universe, and I want to be at one with the universe, okay? And the longing is, I don't feel at home. And this one is about separation. When you are born, you are separated from that womb-like experience. And there's a part of us that always wants to get back home in terms of that kind of thing. The other thing that can affect this is you can be abandoned and are isolated or somehow separated from something. And when you get separated, then that becomes your issue, is how do I get back into union with who I really need to be? Now, in world one, that longing is kind of like homesickness. It's that I don't, you know, if you've had ever been homesick, you know how that feeling, God, it's an ache, isn't it? I just want to go home. Just get me home. And it's that comes from this. Now, the way that world one works is that world one is usually about relationships, and relationships is the thing that speaks to this world. And the way you feel home is you feel in community or it at home in relationships. It could be one person, could be like a family group, could be even a workplace or something like that, where you are all together in terms of things. But that's how this world works. It's really experienced in relationships. And that's where the atonement comes. That's where the salvation comes for this world, the dark side of this world. Jesus in this world, and we'll be looking at these things later as we do this, Jesus is the one who leads us home. And we've talked about that in terms of the other things. Now, that's the dark side that has to do with this world one. And nature is the draw here for world one. In world two, when I write the word universe here, it's nature is the draw. Because this person feels like, you know, if they go to the beach or they go to the mountains, they're at one with God or the nature of things, and time becomes non-existent, and that feels like I'm here where I need to be. So this one is at one with nature in terms of the way that it thinks. So nature is the draw for world one. As opposed to world two, where history is where you live it out. And that's where everything has to be taken care of. World one kind of transcends time or disregards time. Whereas in world two, when you're living in history, time is of the essence. And time is where you work things out in terms of how that goes. And so that's how that works in terms of that. The person who is in world one also is, they don't like time because time separates things. And actually, time can separate you from where you want to be. I remember a time when I felt home. But because of time, you lose that. And so time is an issue that has to be dealt with in this world in terms of this. World two. World two is about warriors. It's about anger. A lot of it, that's why I said world two, you can stand back. World one is nature, and I use the National Geographic and some of these Animal Planet stuff. You know, in world one, nature is, it's benevolent, it's all good and everything. But in world two, if you look at nature, it's a dog-eat-dog world out there, you know. I don't want to be a gazelle near the pride of lions, you know, that kind of thing. And so it's all about that kind of stuff, and it's conflict. And that's where they lead themselves. And where do you work it out? You work it out in your life. In your lifetime is where it is. Now, the Old Testament is particularly rich in this kind of image because we talk about the warrior God that goes to war in terms of things. And all you have to do is read 1st, 2nd Kings, 1st and 2nd Samuel, and you go back in there. And that particular image where God is involved in the conflicts of the Israelis and all that goes with that is all about being God's people in the midst of a evil world and dealing with that kind of stuff. And that kind of image actually works in certain areas. In this one, God transcends time. In this one, God enters time. In world one, time is the problem because it separates things. In world two, the God of history is actually involved and life is lived under promise that this thing will be made right, whatever the conflict is. And world two, people become intoxicated with living in this world in this time. You see a lot of this in social justice issues and things, and people who take on those kinds of things because they get so engrossed into these kinds of things. And that is one of the things. Now, as I'm describing these worlds, there are churches that fit each of these worlds in some form or fashion because of their clientele, you might say, their congregation. So that's world two. World three actually is within hailing distance of world one. In world one, the church becomes the instrument of creating home. I notice that a lot of people go, when they go to church, they are looking for a home. If they're world one, they're looking for a community where they can be a part of that community. And it feels like home. And in our society today, there's a lot of World One people out there who are just kind of lost out there. And they're looking for that relationship. And this is where they come in terms of the church, sometimes just to find a home. And that's what it's about. Now, in World Three, church is the home with value added, you might say. There is, with World 3, an enriched belonging, you might say, because it brings in meaningfulness in terms of this. World 1 is ordered. It's predictable because when you look at the universe, it's very dependable and trustworthy. But in World 3, you can add on to organisms desire and need the novelty of growth. And growth is an ordered process. And if you've been to the banquet, and if you know who the author of the banquet is in terms of that, and you start listening to the outlines, when you deal with the obstacles to grace outlined, sin is what? Just getting things out of order. Well, I hate to say that my world played into that because I wrote the outlines. Therefore, and I wrote the outlines before I knew anything about these worlds. And I said, I go back in there now and I can see, this is world three that is in here. If you put world one in there, that's more like missing the mark. Instead of being out of order. So that's what it does. And world three is that there's order to things, but change is inevitable, but growth is also part of that process. and that's where you're pulled into. Now, I'm going to give you a good example of these worlds in terms of the Lord's Supper. When we take communion, a world one person, when they are in the context of the community taking communion, there is that sense of belonging, or they're at home with it. World two people, when they take communion, they have a sense in which they are joining together in the struggle that Christ is trying to change the world to be a more better place. And that's what it is. World three people can picture the Lord's Supper as an empowering moment when they are filled with completeness and fruitfulness. World four people, when they come to communion, they get a sense of forgiveness that takes place. And world five people, those who are in suffering, Christ is with us in our suffering because that is the feel that is in the Last Supper. He is with us through his suffering as well. And this is how these things are kind of played together within the context of the church. In world three, the atonement is really about love growing in meaning and fulfillment. And this world is by invitation. It's as if Jesus invites us. Come and follow me and I'll make you a fisher of men. I will teach you how to live. I will show you the mysteries of the kingdom. I will do this. And it's in by invitation in world three. And the power of God is a God, is Jesus is one who inspires people to be more than they are. And so God's will in this one is consistent with human freedom, which is self-affirmation. And without God, we sink back into the meaninglessness of it, or the impotence of it, or the insignificance of who we are. And that's where that statement came, and I think it was Apostle Paul that wrote it, is God, it is in God that we live and move and have our being. And actually, between worlds one and three, in our society today, everything's changed, but nothing's different. And everything's different, but nothing's changed. And it really goes back to this New Age thinking that's out there. And I don't know if any of you have got your head around that at times in your life, but world one and three kind of are the wrapping instruments for that kind of thing. So you, in New Age thinking, you get one with nature and you get one with God. So you have this nature and God together. And then anyone who teaches this is kind of a sub-guru, God, and brings them along. In world three, God is not to blame for things because God orders things. God is doing all that he can do in terms of luring and inviting and teaching people. And so he's not the reason that things go bad. Jesus is then the authentic pose of humanity. He's the lens which we look to build our lives in world three. World four, which is condemnation and forgiveness, this one is really about stressing the atonement. This is, the atonement has to do with redemption. Experiencing relationships in world one makes you feel, have that feeling that you are one with somebody or a group of people. Love is, in this one, is that the atonement is battle. It's intercession. You get together and you fight with at something to bring about vindication or something. In this one, atonement, love is that which is, you grow in the meaning of it, and the fulfillment of life comes through that. Now, world 4, which is love is for, is where is it? Is it up here? It's not up here. I ran out of room. It's forgiveness. Love is forgiving those who are guilty. Now, one of the things that I want to say here, this for all of us, you need to know your question. And the thing that I also know about this is that every last one of us needs to understand that this is significant for each of us in its own way. And I am not here to trivialize this stuff, because there really is a predicament that all of us have to deal with in these all these worlds. In world 4, the beginning point is really about condemnation. You condemn yourself because you know that you're basically demonic or evil and just no good on the inside. And it really hurts to understand that feeling in terms of it. And you know also in world 4, now, that this one's harsh, because world 2 and world 4 are harsher than the 1 and 3. They're harsh in this way, because people will beat themselves to death in terms of condemnation because they know that forgiveness costs. And one of the things that I know is that the way you pay for sin is by restitution, you make up for it, or retribution, somebody beats the tar out of you, or somebody forgives you. And when somebody forgives you, it costs. The one who is forgiving you, it costs them dearly to give and receive. And those of us who live outside of world 4 sometimes trivialize this idea of forgiveness because that's not where we live. But forgiveness is so important, and to miss the cost of what real forgiveness is to lose God in this world. And if you lose God, you have nothing. And so in this world, if you don't recognize your sin, you have no need of a Savior. Hosea is a good picture of how this world works. In Hosea chapter 10, especially, Hosea, if you know his story, this is one of the ways that God works too, by the way. God will give you a lesson. And I think that he does this to all of us in our individual worlds in some form or fashion. But, and it just depends on what your lesson is and if you're discerning enough to pick up on it. But Hosea's was this. Hosea, I'm sorry, buddy, but you're it. That's what God's saying to him. He says, I want you to do something so that you'll understand my relationship to the people of Israel. Because this is the only way you're really going to understand it is you're going to have to live it. And he says, I want you to go out there and I want you to marry a prostitute. So Hosea does this. And this woman constantly commits adultery against Hosea. And Hosea is learning the feeling that God has towards his people who go after other gods all the time. And so he says, Hosea, I want you to understand this in your heart, not just with your mind, how my relationship with my people really is, because they go after all kinds of other gods. They're actually having spiritual sex with other gods. And you need to understand this in order for you to understand my forgiveness. And I want you to forgive her. Now, God put him in that not to teach him a lesson like, smack you up and get you working right. He wanted to teach Hosea how it felt to be God. And by doing that, Hosea could then prophesy to the people of Israel in a way that spoke to that particular set of people at that time. And he was one that you don't trivialize the forgiveness, because he's the one that was paying the bill all the time. Martin Luther, who is the founder of the Lutheran Church, is probably out of World 4, because if you ever read any of his writings, he is totally taken with this understanding that he is a sinner in the sight of God, that only God can make him righteous, and the forgiveness that he receives is a debt that he cannot pay back, and yet he walks in the assurance of that salvation, but it just drives him crazy on the inside that God would have to pay that kind of price to take care of him. Only in being forgiven does one truly know oneself as a sinner, you might say. And that's how this particular world works. And all of these, and that's the dark hole in World 4 really has to do with that feeling of condemning yourself and living in the hell of self-condemnation. And so faith, that justification by grace through faith, faith is also that gift that can't be repaid. It's just can't be. It's a gift. It's so big that it staggers a person. It's the guy on the death row that gets the reprieve, and he is set free, and somebody else goes to the gallows. At the foot of the cross, our condition is revealed. It is a gift. It is a gift. And you cannot know that feeling unless you live in this world. There's the analogy of death row that goes with this. For World 1, the reprieve is the prodigal son who comes home and finds that he still has a place, even after he's been out there. And if he was World 4, it'd be because of all of his sinning, but that one's really redemption in the home. And but in World 4, it's understanding the death on the cross that takes place. World 4 has a lot to do with Alcoholics Anonymous in terms of that, because they are storytellers. Hi, my name is Jack, and I am an alcoholic, that kind of thing. And they start, and they tell stories of how they've been in the pits of hell and how they have been saved from those pits of hell, and they tell stories. And so stories become part of the panorama of this world especially. In fact, the Lord's Supper is the Last Supper. And in that, you tell that story. And I love to tell the story, you know. And people, this world hears that more so than anyone else. World 3, I'll just back up and I keep kind of working back and forth, and is being emptied of oneself in World 4. This is where you really have to be. I have to be rid of myself because myself is no good. It's the Apostle Paul saying, I want to do the good thing, but I can't, because there's this demon inside me of myself. And so to be emptied of oneself is the PowerPoint and the power moment in World 4 people who live in this condemnation and guilt, is to be emptied of oneself. I'm really nothing. and I need to be nothing. But you contrast that with world three, and in world three, I'm already nothing. The only thing that I can be is filled by God. Because if you were to really talk to me and know me, I'm a hollow man. There's nothing here. It's not that you would even dislike me. You just wouldn't even think about me because there's nothing there. So world three has to be filled, where world four, the self has to be emptied. And if you think about that, those two languages do not speak to one another very easily. And so you have to understand that that's what's going on. And sometimes that we wonder why we don't communicate too well. World five, which I don't have up here, and you have it on your sheet. The real issue is, how do we endure life? God for this world is long-suffering. Every day proves you can do nothing in this life to get out of that which you are suffering. And so you have to surrender to God's will in terms of your life. Now, I talked about this. You can be thrust into this by circumstance. And I think that all the worlds kind of funnel into this ultimately, because none of us are getting out of here alive, and a lot of us get out of here with a lot of pain and suffering that goes with it. But in this world, world five, it is only by living that in this world that you really learn how to have faith as far as this world is concerned. And you have to abandon any attempt to make something of oneself, because you're stuck in this suffering mode and you just keep grinding it out. And so we throw ourselves onto the arms of God, and taking that very seriously, not our own sufferings, but those of God in the world as well. We think about the suffering that Jesus went through. And so we're watching with Jesus. In world five, people understand Gethsemane, the Garden of Gethsemane, where Jesus was sweating blood as he was praying, and the agony of the moment, which was probably worse than actually being crucified. The suffering that Jesus was going through. And in this world, people who look at this world, the cross really screams with sheer agony over the way things are for God as well. When Jesus is up there and he says, "Why have you forsaken me?" Jesus becomes one with us in our suffering, and nothing can separate us from a God who joins with us in our suffering and walks with us in our suffering, with God as with us. In this world, world five, to die well is the key to living well. To die well is the key to living well. What matters in this world is living. Faith is resignation and a refusal to submit to the pain and the suffering that is going on. It's almost like an indignant struggle that goes on. There's no more that I can do. No more that I can do. Everything depends upon how one receives the suffering. How do you live through the suffering? What matters is living. God came down and he became like us. Well, we can think of it in that, but he became human and suffered. And now that endurance is mine. And I'm to uphold that. And that's where my faith comes in. Because I can't change the suffering. I can only figure out how I'm going to live with it. And so that's how this world works. Suffering can drive you into this world. This is the one, because I said none of us are getting out of here alive. So We have all kinds of things that can place us in circumstances of this world. And authentic living is staking one's life on that death and on our own dying, and one's life depends on making life this ongoing test. This is the test. And how I live it is the trial of faith. This is where Jesus, take up your cross daily and follow me. Suffering drives us in this world. And the only way that you can do it is to grab a hold of God and have him walk with you. Now, what we know is that suffering is universal. And all of us usually end up in, there's a few what I would call charmed lives. And I've met a couple of them. But suffering is the leveler of humanity. Because it doesn't matter whether you are a king or a pauper. It doesn't matter whether you're black or white. It doesn't matter whether you're old or young. It doesn't matter. Suffering is the great leveler of humanity. And the importance of Jesus is the heart of our suffering is also endured. Even as we feel it, we walk with Jesus. And he walks with us in our suffering. One of those poems or pictures that really speaks to this world is the picture that we've had on a bulletin now and then, but also the story, Footprints. Who's walking with them in their suffering? It's Jesus, but not only that, but he carries us in our suffering. And so this world is about endurance lived as a promise. You stake your life on something that endures. And is so that the suffering is worth it in terms of that kind of thing. Now, I've got some time here. So, I'm going to do a little bit. Again, here's those five worlds. Now, I want you to take this test home with you this week. And I'm really not concerned whether you bring it back or not, or just so you can figure out where you are, okay? That's the most important thing. There's two things that I'm world three, so I can't help it. Self-understanding is tremendously important. You know, in the banquet, we have a talk called Changing Our Environment. But what that talk is really about is understanding our environment. And the first environment you have is yourself. You and I all carry our own weather with us. It may be sunny for everybody else, but you can come in with storms blowing. You carry your own weather. So one of the things about that talk is you need to understand your own environment. But then it reaches out from there and say you need to understand the people around you. You need to understand the places where you work and all that kind of, and what makes them tick. Because for you to be effective as God's man or woman in your environment, you need to understand that. You need to understand your environment. And one of the things that we do, we have to understand ourselves first. And we get a feel for this. When I discovered this stuff about 12 years ago or 14 years ago, it really impacted the way that I look at the world. Because I can be talking to people. And because this stuff rattles around on the inside of me, I can figure out, oh, this person is a World One person. And this person has abandonment or isolation experience in their life that has really affected their lens on how they look at the world. And so if I know that, I can be more effective as God's man for that person if I know their language. That's one of the things that we're looking for here is the language. How do we minister to one another when we live in these different contexts? And so part of this is learning your context, but also then you'll at least understand. You know I'm World 3. And when I discovered this, I looked at the banquet. Because now we had a group of six people who wrote the banquet and did them. But I looked at all the grace talks, and all the grace talks had this World 3 feel to them. And I said, I may have to do something. So when we readjusted them about 5 or 6 years ago, we tried to incorporate things into these talks that were more than just where I live, because that's no good. When I attended a weekend similar to the Great Banquet, the guy who gave the sacramental grace talk, and he's talking about all the things that we do in church, he was talking about in his presentation of the Lord's Supper and the dying moment stuff, he was talking about it in terms of coming home. Coming home to Jesus. Well, I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, you know, I don't need to come home to Jesus. But I didn't realize, and it's over a period of time as I look back, because at the time I didn't know it, but that man was coming out of World One. And the reason he was coming out of World One is he was an orphan, literally an orphan, and he grew up in an orphanage. And he was a Methodist minister now, but that worldview was affecting how he was presenting that part of the sacramental grace talk. And I wondered why it didn't speak to me until I found all this. Of course it didn't speak to me, because I'm not a person who suffered from abandonment. I suffered from hollowness. So I need to hear somebody talk about, you know, finding meaning in life. What do you do when you can't find it? So one of the things that I want us all to do is to find out who we are, so we can kind of do that. But then you have family, you have friends, you have co-workers and things. You have people with us in the church. And I know that. And so one of the things that I also try to do, and I'm only so good at this because I'm human, is I mix up the sermons that you get on Sunday morning so that we hit the worlds. Now, you don't get a whole lot of World 2 out of me, but you can on occasion. Well, I'm just not an angry person. I'd just shoot you, and then I'd be done with you. But, you know, one of the things that we have to do is we have to speak the language of who we are. So, very quickly, World 1, sense of abandonment, isolation, feeling small, feeling lonely, longing to find home or a place. You want to feel authentic in relationships. And that's bringing things together that are separated. The ultimate relationship, though, is the relationship with God, and that's the God hole in us. Death is the final separation, or it's the final reunion, or it's both at the same time. World 2 is about self-interest is the problem in the world, and conflict is really about being in conflict with institutions, and people divide things into winners and losers and warriors and victims. It's a reactive world that has to do with anger and rebellion a lot of times. And the hope, though, is that if you're going to get into the conflict, it's worth dying for. Death, and this is the enemy. But only in death can there be resurrection. And so that's where, you know, if you're going to destroy an institution, it's a death. But out of that, something new can rise. Doesn't mean, of course, then they get upset because that institution doesn't work right either. That's World 2. World 3 is self, has to do with the self, and it's nothingness or worthlessness or emptiness or feeling invisible or insignificant. the world has a tendency to try to be what others want me to be, you know? Anybody here do that kind of stuff where you try to be what others want you to be? And when you do that, you lose yourself because it's not you. It's the mask. Death is actually living empty. Or life is growth and becoming my true self. So death is being empty on the inside. And of course, when you die, you're empty. But if you're going to be with Jesus, you'll be your real self. In World 4, the temptation is, and sin is, to play God. I know my motivation, and it is questionable. That's the way they think. I can't get out of my own way. It's not self-realization as in World 3, but it's self-sacrifice at that point, because I got to get out of myself because of myself is the problem. Whereas in World 3, self is the issue because I feel like I'm nothing. I need to be filled to be something. World 4 is about this temptation to play God, and we just can't seem to get out of our own way because we know our motivation, and it's really demonic at different levels. World 5, life is the dilemma. Heaviness, there's a heaviness to daily living. And since we can't change our lives, the only thing that we have left is the choice in how we live it. It's this almost this attitude when you're living on that negative side, whatever can go wrong will. And I know it will, and yet I've got to endure it. That's just the way it is. And then God screams in agony with us from Calvary. The attitude is all, it's all about attitude in suffering. You know, you have to have that ability to face the suffering and keep your integrity and persevere. Faithfulness no matter what the consequences. This is the suffering servant image in Isaiah that comes forth. And this is the one where say, you don't quit. You don't give up. You just keep being resolute. You keep at it. You keep at it. How many of you have seen Cool Hand Luke? Do you remember when George Kennedy Paul Newman were in that fight, and George Kennedy was just beating the snot out of Paul Newman? You remember that fight? And Luke kept getting up off the ground. And they said, stay down, Luke, stay down. And he kept getting up, and Kennedy would hit him again, and hit him again, and hit him again, and they, stay down. And he would not stay down. That's World 5. I will endure this, and I will triumph out of it. And finally, Kennedy quit. And that was perseverance. That was not a fight. That was a beating. It's in the beating, the attitude that goes forth. Okay, now I've gone over those things so that you can take these home. Now, we have a few minutes. If somebody wants to ask a question, or have something that you... Yes, John? You got to come up front here because I can't hear you back there. Got to get up closer. That's good enough. Suffering. That's World 5. Well, that's dying to self. That would be World 4. Would it not? Suffering is a world. Suffering is, it's not about changing your world. It's about understanding your world. Suffering is Suffering is the lens that some people look through. Right. Yeah, but that was to show World 4 in terms of the power of sin and the need for forgiveness and what it cost God. They did. I think they did. Depends on who you... That's probably like any of our stories. Depends on who you talk to. Yeah, but in that particular, that was a lesson that God was teaching Hosea, not teaching him a lesson for to beat on him, but to let him know how his relationship with God. And I'll give you another example of that. In Abraham, the story of Abraham in chapter 22, when God tells him to take Isaac up on the mountain, he says, I want you to know how it is. This is what I have to do with my son. And everything that you're feeling, Abraham, in terms of sacrificing your son on Mount Moriah, you will not just get intellectual understanding, which is book learning about what I'm doing. You'll have heart knowledge of what it is to give up your blood kin as a sacrifice. And that was a lesson for him. That, he was teaching Abraham that lesson. In terms of that. Now, what world was that, though? Probably 5. Probably. Yeah. You can. I think Paul was World 4. And that's just from his writings. He kind of echoes that world because he knows he's a sinner. And, I mean, he knows his condemnation, okay? And it comes forth in that. There are pictures. One of the things that we're going to do is we're going to look at the biblical pictures that go with each of these in terms of the light side of it. We've just been looking at the dark side. I've given a few hints in terms of the light side of this stuff, but Jesus actually is the answer for all of these worlds as he plays out. He plays all the worlds. He is in all of them. There are pictures, though, that he paints, like the prodigal son, that's World 1. That's definitely World 1. This person separates himself from his family, says, I don't want to be here anymore. Give me my part of the inheritance, I'm getting out of here. And a separation. And then the reunion takes place. It's not about forgiveness. It's about receiving him home. If you read the story. And that's a story. And all those lostness ones are basically that World 1. The 99 sheep and the one sheep. He goes out seeking after that one to find it, to bring it home. Yeah. Five worldviews. No, it's not good or bad. It's not about good or bad. It's about understanding. Well, I'm coming out of my world. Probably. Yes, that's the thing that I strive for, is to be able to communicate with other worlds, because until I can communicate with a person who lives out of guilt, I cannot speak the language. Because I have to produce the gift of forgiveness to that person in such a way that they understand it. The thing that I know is that I deal with people a lot, but you deal with people too. And if you understand yourself, that's really good. But then you can kind of look around, and it's not a matter of one world being better than the other world. It's just the different lenses. That's all it is. It's different lenses. And some people are more pronounced with their lens than others, more nearsighted, you might say, with their lens than others. But if you can listen to language, that's usually the way that you can hear it, is that when I do counseling with people, I'm listening to their language. It's not about me giving them an answer so much as I need to understand what they're saying. And because what they're saying is they're coming out of themselves, and that's their lens. And for me to be effective in ministry with a person, I really need to have a little bit of understanding of the world they live in. And every one of us lives in a world. You understand that? I mean, there's a little universe in every one of us, and it's kind of like we're separated by light years. And we can communicate, but we have our own little universe. You know, and in the dark night of your soul, when you're sitting there at 3 o'clock in the morning and you're just stewing over it, if you know your world, it can lessen the holes. World one, yeah, we can bridge. Like if you're dealing with suffering, suffering a lot of times, all you have to do is you have cancer, and you're thrust into a world by doing that. But I would be like, well, what's the point of this? What's the meaning of this? You know, or is this meaninglessness again? A little, you know. And I'd rattle around in my world, but that can thrust you into the world of suffering. Yeah, I think, yes. And some of us are more dominant than others because I think that has to do with strength of personalities and stuff like that, too. And some of us are more negative than others. You know, we're below the line more. Some of us are above the line so much that we very rarely get into the hole, you might say. Everybody's a little bit different, but understanding yourself is the key to this. When I finally, oh, that's me all over, and I knew that, then I can see how it affects. And I have to be very careful in preparation of messages and things like that to make sure that I just don't always do World 3, because there are people who need to come home. And that has to be expressed in a way of community of some kind. So, did you have a question?
Yeah, I just wondered if circumstances of life were the only thing that could change the rhythm, or would a circumstance throw you into a different world?
Well, it could throw you into a different world for a time. let's put it this way. You can be guilty as sin for doing something, and you know it. In your knower, but you may come out of world one and you may recognize the sin, and suddenly you're in a guilt situation and you know that you're guilty, and that can eat you up on the inside in such a way so you're actually kind of taking a tour in world four at that point in time, or the suffering. No, I don't think you have to do that. I think So at some point, somebody has to bring you home, though. Because the guilt probably causes separation.
Okay, and the other thing I
want
to know is, are there certain worlds that should not
end? No, that's... No. No. Let me say it. Yeah, we're all thinking it. World 1 and 3 are within hailing distance of one another. World 3 is basically, let's go home and let's learn something else at the same time. World 2 is that the problem is all out there in the world, and that's what's tearing up. But in World 4, the problem is also in me, and that's why the world is the way it is, because the same thing that's in me, we're all demonic and basically no good, and so those two relate to one another, too, as well. No, I don't think so. I don't want to do a whole lot of opening the windows here, but I'm a World 3 person married to a World 4 person. And she's always trying to make me feel guilty, and it doesn't work. I'm going to say, what's the point in that? And it's almost become comical because I know when she's doing it, and I'm not going to, I don't feel guilty here. Why should I feel guilty? But I may lose meaning over something. And so, no, it doesn't. I think as long as you, marriage is like any other relationship except it's intimate. And you need to learn how the other person really sees the world. I think it's important. I think it's very important in marriage to have some understanding of who you're married to. And if this is helpful, because I know the two worlds in which we function. And we do all right, as long as I don't feel guilty. But no, there's none that you have to stay away from or anything like that. You may not identify very well with them because that isn't the way you see the world. But one of the things that I ask also, we need to have empathy for one another. That's not sympathy, that's empathy. And so if I can put myself into your shoes for just a few minutes and be able to feel a little bit of that, then I can have empathy. And by doing that, I may be able to speak to your issues. Can't solve them, but I can speak to them and maybe give direction. And you can do that same thing with some of the people around you. Because really, this is World One talking, it is about community. And being together in these things. We better quit. Take that stuff home and do it, and we'll probably use the results of that at some other time. I know there are people who aren't here, and there's people who also listen to this on CD, and those of you, if you are listening to it on CD, you can pick up the test here. We got enough of them. Make sure you get also that other sheet, and we'll kind of look at this later. This is about self-understanding. I don't necessarily need to know everything about you or everybody else, but you need to know a little bit about yourself. So let's pray. Lord, I ask that in the midst of this, that you would give us revelation, not just self-understanding, but revelation as well, that we might see not only with our eyes, but that we might see with your eyes as well. In Jesus' name, amen.